Hey, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to this program, Memorial Day 2011. I just can't say to people, Happy Memorial Day. You know, I mean, you can say happy just about every other day. Happy Yom Kippur. Happy Christmas. Happy, you know, but it's difficult to say Happy Memorial Day. Can't do it. Can't do it. This hour is sponsored by Robert Mason. Thank you, Robert Mason. Even on a holiday, Robert Mason is one of our sponsors. Thank you very much. I got went into town, went by the post office today. And a couple of snail mail things in there for me. Somebody named M.M. Ta-da! Sent this to me. It's Festival of Hope, Sunday, June 5th, St. Leo Church. This is in... where is this? What city? I can't... Sponsored by Women in Black. Is this Detroit? Oh, wait. Here's an idea. There's some ads back here. This will make sense in a minute. Tacoma, Washington. It's in Washington State. Okay. Washington State. The guy sent me a letter that apparently was posted at a website regarding a priest who has been locked up in jail. He's in his, he's an old man. When I look at the picture of him here, he definitely seems old. And this priest was locked up. Oh, he's 83. Okay. Along with several other 80-year-olds, here we go, who were protesting the nuclear submarine base in Bremerton, Washington, and the Department of Energy in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. The person who wrote this to me said he was tortured, and it's underlined, in the Atlanta Federal Penitentiary. And then it says, read on. This was an insert in the bulletin at St. Leo's Church in Tacoma, Washington. And here's what it says. I arrived in Knoxville on Saturday, May 7th. That evening, I visited Bix, Father Bix. I visited Bix at the Knox County Detention Facility. Each inmate is limited to 2 30-minute visits per week. Not very much time for family and friends support. Once you pass through security, your allotted 30-minute time slot begins. Then comes a long walk down 3 very long hallways, precious minutes of your visitation time used up in the walk. I saw some visitors using canes and walkers, obviously requiring them to use up even more of their visitation time. Other visitors walked quickly, some ran. You arrive finally, in a cubbyhole of a space with a steel bench and a 3 by 4 foot, 1 inch thick glass barrier surrounded by concrete block. A phone hangs on your wall to the left with a cord that extends barely long enough for you to both talk and look through the glass. That will be the extent of intimacy allotted for you for your visit. I'm not sure what I expected to encounter, but what I did see was a broken and very hurting soul, pale, frail, mildly shaking, complaining of being unable to hear because of fluid in his ears, dizziness and lightheadedness, pointing with his fingers that he is struggling to push the right numbers on the phone so we can talk. Eyes glassed over, flat effect, and complaining that his gait is so poor. Yet he has been commanded to keep moving, requesting a wheelchair and being refused. Then he began to talk about the week he spent in Atlanta. Looking back, we all spoke of our grave concern of his traveling via federal prisoner transport, but I sincerely believe none of us realized what he was going to go through at the Atlanta Federal Penitentiary. He went on to tell me with tears in his eyes that he was placed in a cell and locked in there with woefully inadequate bedding and clothing for a week. He repeatedly asked guards for clothing and an extra blanket and was laughed at and ignored. At some point, after repeated requests, another inmate gave up his blanket to Bix. Bix's medical problems create a lack of blood and oxygen to his hands and feet, leaving those extremities white and ice cold when his overall body temperature falls. Following this, much like one drowning in a frozen body of water, your hands and feet are filled with pain, like being jabbed repeatedly with needles. He then spoke of the never-ending pain leading to sleep deprivation, insomnia, and ultimately disassociation and hallucinations. Bix was certainly aware of what he was doing as he walked onto the base at Bangor and across the blue line at Y-12, and for these acts he is ready to remain in prison and pay the ultimate price. But this in no way permits the system of criminal injustice to do what it has done to him. These unjust and unlawful acts perpetrated on him and his trip from Seattle are tantamount to torture. I've consulted with his attorneys both here and in Tacoma. Legal avenues are being looked at to ensure Bix is not returned to SeaTac in the same form of prison transport that was used to take him to Knoxville, Tennessee. Kathy Boylan and I went to see him on Sunday evening, and we could see even then that his overall frame of mind had improved. On Monday, May 9th, the trial began for Bix and 11 other defendants charged with trespassing at the Department of Energy Y-12 facility in Oak Ridge, Tennessee on July 5th, 2010. This was a note from a guy named Joe who went to Tennessee to see Father Bix. 83-year-old priest. It reminds me, of course, of the older priests and nuns, some in their 80s, who are arrested in Columbus, Georgia, at Fort Benning, every year in protest of the renamed, but still the same, School of the Americas, where right-wingers from Central and South America and God knows where else are taught the finer arts of interrogation, torture, and suppression of human rights. 83 years old. Father Bix. I guess his name is Bickley? B-I-C? But there's four of them that are addressed here in this bulletin. Bix, Susan, Lynn, and Father Steve. Ay. There is a prayer meeting every Tuesday at Gene's House of Prayer, 1414 Tacoma Avenue. So, on this Memorial Day, I thought it was appropriate to mention Father Bix, and thanks to M.M. in Yakima, is that how you say it? Yakima, Washington, who sent this to me. I guess Memorial Day is anything you want it to be, right? I have another letter from a young lady who writes that she's 15 years old, named Diane. I'm going to share that with you when we come back. It's an interesting letter. As you can probably guess here in the 15 minutes of program, I'm not too into the normal screaming, frothing, insane stuff I usually get into, although the night is still young. Stick around. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. light of the world. Welcome back, 21 past the hour. So I get an email, a regular letter from Diane in Salem, Oregon. It says, "Dear Mike and Kathy Malloy, I am 15 years old and a sophomore in high school. My dad is a producer in radio and said I would probably be more likely to get a response from you if I wrote a letter instead of emailing. I hope you will reply. We listen on KPOJ in Portland. I'm learning so much, underlined, from listening to your show, and I think you must be very good and courageous people to do what you are doing. But something you said this week bothers me, and I thought that maybe you could explain it. One of the best parts of your show are the callers. I used to like Marge when she called. You were so nice to her when she was dying. Also, Susan from Washington and Sandra from California. I think that's Sandra. But my favorite is Blue, who I think is a pilot from Australia. His job sounds so exciting, and he makes me think of people my mom likes, maybe because of his voice, Harrison Ford and Liam Neeson. These are people I can respect because they know the world and how compassion for the suffering of the poor and those who have lost their families in war, sometimes because of the policies of our government. This does not make me popular with many of the other kids at school, but listening to you convinces me that something is very wrong in our country. On Tuesday night, you said that Blue had called, and it sounded like you did not want to talk to him, and that Kathy had put him on hold, and you seemed to hope he was on hold too long. If he was on hold too long, he would hang up. Then you came on and talked about President Obama and Israel and how people see us and the rest of the world, and I kept saying, right on, I'm not supposed to know words like," and she mentions a couple of the cuss words that I used, "and my mom was fist bumping me." My question is, why did you act as though you were annoyed that Blue had called, and then when he was on the air with you, you were friendly and listened politely to what he said and agreed with him? I felt badly that you had said those things. Then my dad said that it's like a game between you and Blue, and you pretend that you don't want him to call, but that really more people listen and call and email if they think Blue is the bad guy. Is that true? You probably won't write back, and I know you're very busy, but you and Norman Goldman are the only talk shows I listen to and trust, even though my mom and dad keep telling me I should be very careful about trusting what I hear on the radio. Well, thanks if you read this. One of my teachers said she has to be very careful what she says now. My grandma says things were different when she was a girl and that you didn't have to be afraid of what you said. Anyway, do you think Blue is wrong? Why did you say those things if it's not a game? I hope you keep letting everybody on the air when you have time. Sincerely, Diane. P.S. Molly sounds really cool when she reads stories with you on the air. You can read this on the air if you want, but it's okay if you don't. I would just like to know what you meant. Diane." Well, thank you, Diane, for writing. The other night, when to answer your question specifically, the other night when Blue called in, I just wasn't in the mood. That's why I very seldom take phone calls. I don't necessarily get in the mood to talk all that often with, you know, in dialogue. I just don't. The people who do call this program, I enjoy talking with once they're on the phone, but it's just, you know, trying to get into that frame of mind to put people on the air and chat. Some programs are caller driven, and this one isn't. By caller driven, I mean, you know, the talk show host relies on a lot of people to call in. And I just have never done that. I have worked at radio stations where they insisted that callers be put on the air. I don't know why, but that's just not my style. No offense to anybody, just not my style. Now, as far as Blue, the last three or four calls from Blue, he seemed to have gotten into a pattern of, you know, when I take him on the air, and I enjoy hearing from him. I really do. You know, he's obviously a world traveler, or at least if he's not, he certainly has convinced me he is, because he is a pilot for, I think he's a commercial pilot for, I think he's a corporate pilot, not a commercial jetliner. So he's, you know, he's very interesting and quite entertaining. It's fun to talk with Blue, but, you know, just to listen to the same kind of approach, which was this feeling I got with Blue there. Oh, if I take his call, he's just going to bust up on Obama. I bust up on Obama, but not quite. I don't think. Well, maybe I do. I don't know. Maybe that's it. It becomes like an echo chamber. A couple of guys sitting around busting up on the President of the United States. I mean, you know, how long can you sustain that before people go, ugh? So anyway, Diane, I'm always glad to hear from Blue. That particular night, you're absolutely right. I didn't necessarily want to get him on the air. Just didn't feel up to it. But anyway, you're very perceptive, and I appreciate the fact that you picked up on that. That's very good. And your parents are right. Be very careful what you listen to on the radio that you believe is real, okay? Thanks, Diane. We'll be right back. They never did like Mama's homemade dress. Papa's bank book wasn't big enough. And he was standing on the side of the railroad, falling on his shoes. Heading out for the East Coast, Lord knows he paid some dues. Getting through, tangled up in blue. She was mad.
Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
This hour is being sponsored by Robert Mason. Yay, Robert. Thank you, Robert. Thank you. All right, one more letter. This one was an email. The other two were actual snail mail with stamps. This is from Sam. He writes, this is from Sam in LA. It's about military dad. This is Memorial Day. Sam writes, I lost my dad in 1990. He was 63. He retired at 58, did a lot of drinking and partying until he checked out. I despise the effing military leadership, in parentheses, and our sick political class that uses people like my dad for cannon fodder. Brainwash, train, throw them in the blank until they can't take anymore. And then when they aren't worth anything to them, spit them out. It's better now, I heard. Some counseling goes on. My dad went through three wives, and most of us kids didn't want to have anything to do with him because he was such a blank. I loved him and I hated him. See the movie, The Flying Santini with Duvall? That was my life. People ask me, did I serve? I tell them I was in for 18 effing years, and I don't get military retirement or anything for the years of blank I went through with him and the Navy. There were some good things, but I effing fought to get those benefits. Good schools, health care, good neighborhoods, if I had to move every 3 years. He didn't give a blank about those things for us, just the Navy. And because I didn't buy the military deal, he never let up. Knockout, drag out fights until he had a stroke at 60. The stroke wasn't caused by me. Still loved the blank. I would call him at 3 a.m., drunk, upset, and start chewing him a new one for the way he treated my mother, me, my sister, my stepmom, etc. And he would sit there and listen. Never hang up, ever. You gotta love that. By the end of the call, I was cool, and we were having a great chat about this or that. My mom just sent me his dress sword, epaulets, gold buttons, and medals. I put it all in cases, and it goes to the Naval Memorial Museum at the D.C. Naval Shipyard when I go next time. He was the curator there. His last duty. Oh, well. I won't forgive him for voting for Reagan, though. That was unforgivable. Sam. And Joe in Madison writes, hey, Mike, crappy Memorial Day, y'all. Let's use this occasion to celebrate the death of supreme America-hating terrorist mastermind Osama bin Laden and to enjoy all the positive things that have sprung forth since his death. What positive things, you ask? Well, for one, the House just passed the National Defense Authorization Act, which includes a provision to authorize worldwide war, which has no expiration date, and will allow a president, this one or any future president, to go to war anywhere in the world at any time without further congressional authorization. Isn't that wonderful? Don't you feel so much safer now? Just think, if a president had simply nuked the entire Middle East before 9/11, the 9/11 terrorist acts would never have happened, if you believe the official story. I mean, it's no big deal to kill millions of Middle Eastern people, right? Especially since most of them haven't accepted Jesus Christ as their personal savior. Joe in Madison. I promised a couple of weeks ago that I would let you know after I had tried. This is not a commercial. This is just a follow-up. This is not a commercial. It's going to sound like one. Helen Hollers, the woman who owns that, Alice, who advertises at our on our website, every once in a while she sponsors an hour. And every further once in a while she'll send some stuff to us. I told you about the hemp oil, or the hemp cream, which is amazing in the winter. Well, I told you a couple months ago, several weeks back, that she had sent us some insect repellent. Helen Hollers Summer Scent. And I told you I couldn't tell anything about it until I tried it. Well, I tried it. And we went to a cookout yesterday. A friend of ours who lives, if ever there's a place in the, it's down near Atlanta, every place that could be called Mosquito Hollow, it would be this place. A lot of mosquitoes. But I put this stuff on and put it on Molly. Kathy put it on. It's made out of almond oil, mountain mint, and essential oils of citronella, eucalyptus, and pennyroyal. Pennyroyal is the cactus? We've always used a thing called cactus juice. It's very hard to find. But I thought I'd give this a try. And I'll tell you what, that guy's backyard is just loaded with pissed off mosquitoes because this stuff, and it's one of those things, I don't think you have to put it all over your body. You just put it a few places in the, I guess the citronella helps in keeping them away. So anyway, it's not a commercial. We don't get paid for doing this. I just wanted to let you know, like a promise, I would try this stuff. I tried it. Yow. Good stuff. Another item here that is in the big picture, kind of inconsequential. Kind of like Sarah Palin started her traveling circus and freak show a couple of days ago, at the end of last week. Launched it from the Rolling Thunder Review, or the Rolling Thunder Review. Come on, Malloy, that was music. Rolling Thunder Vietnam vets thing, you know, on the motorcycles. And she got right in the middle of it, I guess, in D.C. and, you know, started her freak show. That's kind of a non-event. What a sideshow. What a crazed person. I don't think we've ever produced someone like her in terms of just absolute toxic, narcissistic insanity. I mean, she's worse than Newt Gingrich. Okay, wait a minute. Let me think. I'll have to think that one over. But Sarah Palin, oh my God. So a big non-event, a non-event. But it caught my attention, and, you know, so I commented on it, which is what I'm doing right now. Well, there's something else. It was in the business section of the Times. I think it was this morning. You know something that really irritates me? I'm from the old school. I like to listen to radio. I listen to music radio. I listen to rock and roll. I've tried to listen to rap. Some of it I like. About 85, 90% of it. I don't know. It just makes my teeth hurt. But I'm just an old rock and roller, that's all. And I like to listen to rock music. I like to listen to current stuff, too. There's some groups out now, pop groups, that are just excellent. But you know what irritates the hell out of me? is you listen to music and they have become so formulaic, these radio stations, so automated. There's no disc jockey. The disc jockey or the whatever, you know, he or she comes on top, bottom of the hour when they do their 6 minutes of commercial and then back to 54 minutes of music. Listen while you work, you know, all that crap. And then they play the music, and I guess the theory was some radio programmer back in the 80s came up with the idea, don't let the disc jockeys talk ever! Just have them play music! One into the other! Don't stop! There's a station here in Atlanta, Dave FM, that doesn't do that. And, you know, the whole 24-7, I really appreciate that. They have a disc jockey, if that term is still applicable, at noon, named Mara, and she's great. I love to listen to her. Love to listen to her program. Okay, so that really pisses me off. The disc jockeys aren't allowed to say the name of the record or the artist. It just bugs me. I don't know. It bugs me. Well, I'm looking in the New York Times this morning, and I see that CBS Radio. And they own 130 stations in the United States. They're not all rock stations, obviously. Our affiliate in Seattle is CBS O&O, owned and operated. But in a memo to CBS Radio employees, the president and CEO of CBS Radio said he wants the people who are spinning records on his, well, they don't spin records anymore, but you know what I'm saying. The people who is playing music, the disc jockeys, to say the name of the artist and the record. And they don't make records anymore. I understand. I'm just using old talk. All right. In an interview, his name is Mason, Dan Mason. Interview, Mason explained that at some indeterminate point in history, back in the mid-80s, song identification began to vanish from the air as programmers struggled to squeeze every thing that they considered clutter out of their programming. Well, we didn't think it was clutter. I didn't. Did you? To hear, you know, program host, disc jockey, whatever you want to call him or her. So, hats off, by God, to Dan Mason, the president CEO of CBS Radio, who says, when you play it, say it! Dripping from your tongue. A sleepless night. Can I introduce a catheter to siphon up your life? Talk radio, I love you. You fulfill me. You're a hideous reminder of how the country would be. Talk radio, I love you.
For a liberal helping of truth, it's More Mike Malloy.
It's about 9 minutes before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Robert Mason. Thanks, Robert. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Got a chance to read a bio of Kathy Hochul, the woman who was just elected to the congressional seat that had been in Republican hands for 40 years. Kathy Hochul was born at a time when her family was living in a 31-foot by 8-foot trailer not far from Bethlehem Steel Plant near Buffalo, New York. And according to the bio, when things got a little bit better, they moved to the second floor flat of a home in a working-class neighborhood called Woodlawn. The family was just getting by then. Ms. Hochul's father, Jack, did clerical work at the plant at night and attended college during the day, and her mother, Pat, stayed home and raised 6 children. But they were unusually aware of the needs of those around them. It's in the Times, Raymond Hernandez. On holidays, a family brought into their home developmentally disabled children who had no relatives to visit, and they collected food, clothing, and furniture for families who were struggling in the region, hard hit by industrial decline. She was brought up in a modest, devoutly Roman Catholic, service-minded family. She was the second oldest of 6 children. She has spent nearly her entire life in Western New York, a so-called Rust Belt area that is Midwestern in its culture and political sensibilities. As the oldest girl, she worked from a young age. She served pizza and chicken wings at a restaurant in a blue-collar town just south of Buffalo, often arriving home late in the evening. Sheila, one of her sisters, said, quote, "I remember her coming home at 11, 12, 1 in the morning, and she'd get into bed and start studying. We shared a room. Her little light would go on." Now, her parents instilled a sense of civic responsibility into the children. Parents would drive them into poorer neighborhoods in Buffalo to deliver the food, clothing, and furniture that the family had collected. And yet, this family struggled themselves. Her sister said, "We used to shop at the used clothing store." In high school, Kathy Hochul acquired her interest in politics after a teacher took her to took her class to Buffalo City Hall for a tour. In 1976, Kathy Hochul went to Syracuse University, where she became something of an activist, one time leading a boycott of the college bookstore after students complained that the store was charging outrageously high prices. In college, she threw herself into another cause, trying to persuade the university to name a stadium it was building after Ernie Davis, the legendary Syracuse running back who died of leukemia at a young age. And it goes on and on. After graduating from Syracuse in 1980, she earned her law degree at Catholic University in Washington. She got married in 1984. After law school, she landed a job at a law firm in Washington. In 1991, she and her husband returned to Western New York, where they raised 2 children, eventually became something of a local power couple. Mr. Hochul went on to work at the United States Attorney's Office in Buffalo, and Kathy Hochul entered politics. A year ago, her mother, concerned about the rate of domestic violence in the area, decided she wanted to open a transitional house for abused women and their children. Kathy Hochul drew up the paperwork to help her mom establish the home and then later even help babysit the children of the women living there so they could attend counseling and other programs. "It became a big family project," said a friend who served on the town board with Ms. Hochul. "That's just the type of family Kathy is from." Kathy Hochul's mom said, "There's a saying that says, go out in the world and do well, but more importantly, go out in the world and do good. I wanted my children to grow up and be happy and successful, but more importantly, I wanted them to give back to others." You know, when I read that, I just think, you know, why is it always a Democrat or a liberal who does that? I don't know anything about the Republican that Kathy Hochul ran against, but I would be willing to bet that she was not brought home shortly after being born to live in a trailer someplace, and then the family got to work. By the way, her dad eventually became the president of the company that he went to work for. But doing things for other people, that's what Kathy Hochul did. Her The person running against her, the Republican, the woman in the race who is a Republican, her thing was to strip people of their social safety net, take away their Medicare, take away their Social Security, turn it over to somebody else, take away aid to women, infants, and children, take away food stamps, take everything away. That's what Republicans do. But Kathy Hochul, who I knew nothing about, I'm not in her district, obviously. I lived in the buckle of the Bible Belt. But here's this woman who lives in Western New York, brought up Roman Catholic in a fairly large family, and was taught to devote a good part of her life to doing good things. Isn't it amazing that you never see a bio like this about Republicans?
When did your life start?
It is 7 past the hour, the Malloy Show. This hour is sponsored by Maria Battaglia. She has a message. Hello to Mike and Kathy from independent television producer Maria Battaglia. Let's all try to stop echoing what Republicans do and say. Instead of presenting problems, let's hear more about solutions. P.S. Don't blame God for mankind's evil. Thank you, Maria. I just met a girl. Love that song. Moving right along here. Last week, I told you about the FEMA trailers that were full of poison and death, lung disease, cancer, blood diseases. Those are the trailers that were given to the survivors of Rita and Katrina, the two tornadoes that slammed into the Gulf Coast. What's it been, 3-4 years ago now? And people were forced to live in them. Bruce Enberg said had they been allowed to just slap a coat of paint over the insides of the walls that were full of this poison, it would have stopped the toxins from... the gas from the toxins from entering the room and making people sick, and eventually it'll kill some of them prematurely. Anyway, what I reported to you was that those trailers that FEMA took back and put in storage someplace, instead of doing the right thing, blowing them up or taking them into the Gulf and dumping them. I mean, what the hell? The Gulf is dead now for the most part. Maybe it would form an artificial reef, bring some fish back. But no, they didn't do any of that. The federal government, FEMA, put them in storage and then eventually sold them. What kind of a person buys trailers in bulk and then resells them knowing that they're full of death and disease? Well, that's capitalism for you, though, isn't it? Huh? It doesn't make any difference.
It's not my problem, man. I just bought the goddamn things. I don't know. I'm just selling them. People need a place to live, Malloy. Shut your pie hole.
You know how it goes. You know how capitalism works. If there's a market for it, no matter what it is, somebody will sell it, even if it's poison. So anyway, some good news. the city of Cordova, Alabama, that was a small town, town of 2000, was hit by a tornado, a pair of powerful tornadoes, April 27th. That was the day that twisters killed more than 300 people across the southeast. 238 died in Alabama, the highest death toll for any state in a spring of violent weather. An EF3 twister, 140 miles an hour, slammed into Cordova, Alabama, about 5:30 a.m. And about 12 hours later, an EF4 with winds around 170 miles an hour struck, killing four people, cutting a path of destruction through the town. Residents whose homes were destroyed assumed they'd be able to live in one of the hundreds of long, skinny mobile homes that FEMA is providing as temporary housing for tornado victims. But the city enacted a law 3 years ago that bans the type of mobile home provided by FEMA called single-wide trailers. Double-wides are allowed. But these single homes, single trailers, single-wides, if you want to call them that, are banned from the city of Cordova. Now, you got to wonder why. The town's refusal to let people occupy this housing caused a lot of folks to get very angry. Matter of fact, they had a meeting last week, circulated petitions to remove the man that many blame for the decision not to allow people live in these trailers, the mayor, Jack Scott. One of the people who was hit by the tornado, who's not her, but her property was, she said, people have to live somewhere. What's it matter if it's in a trailer? The mayor has heard all the complaints, and he said he isn't apologizing. He doesn't want these things in town. Now, you got to wonder as to what the mayor's motivation is. Is it because he doesn't like people who lives in trailer parks? I don't think so. I don't think that's the issue. When you're the mayor of a city of 2,000 in Alabama, trailer parks are us. I mean, trust me, it's not that. Maybe the mayor understands and is trying to protect his residents of his city from the kind of horror that was visited on the people who moved into the trailers after Katrina and Rita. You think? Nowhere in the article I read about this is there any indication as to whether or not FEMA has provided new trailers that are not death traps for the people that move in. I can only imagine. I can't relate because I've not been through a tragedy like these people in the Southeast have been through, or in the South Central states. But I can imagine that just needing a place to move into when everything has been destroyed kind of overrides somebody else deciding that, well, you can't move into this because it's going to make you sick. Or it might kill you, or it might give your baby lung disease that will manifest 20 years from now. Nobody will know why. But nowhere in the article did it say, oh, by the way, as a result of what happened to the refugees from Katrina and Rita, these trailers are no longer toxic, poisonous death traps. You'd think, wouldn't you, that a progressive government that, like the one, the executive branch anyway, that we have now, that progressive president would order the EPA to say to FEMA, or ask FEMA very politely, sirs, madams, please tell us, are these trailers still poisonous? Will people who moved into them be breathing poison that leaks through the drywall? Or are these new ones that aren't toxic? Why doesn't anybody ask that question? Why doesn't somebody just? I mean, isn't that? Wouldn't that be a simple question to ask, given what the trailers have done to so many people who moved in because they had no place to live after Rita and Katrina? Wouldn't it just make sense to ask the question? And wouldn't it make sense to find the people who sold the poison trailers to unsuspecting natural disaster victims? Wouldn't it be a right thing and proper thing to do to find those folks who sold the trailers and charge them with a crime? I don't know what the crime would be, but something. Because you don't go buy government FEMA trailers that have all been condemned without knowing why they've been condemned. I mean, you don't do that, do you? Or maybe the people who bought the trailers fixed them, painted the insides. See, FEMA didn't allow the people who lived there the first go around to paint the insides. Couldn't do that because it's not your trailer. Belongs to FEMA. So maybe I'm just barking up the wrong tree here. Maybe the people who bought the trailers from the government fixed them all up before they resold them. What do you think? Somebody must have kicked you around, son. Who knows, maybe you were kidnapped, tied up, taken away and held for ransom. It don't really matter to me, baby. Everybody's had to fight to be free. Say it now. Had to live like a refugee. Don't have to look like a refugee. Oh, you don't have to live like a refugee. Don't have to look like a refugee. Oh, you don't have to live.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Even Prairie 2 is working today. He is. And he sent me his missive to this program, our economic affairs correspondent. Are your dance shoes fireproof? Okay. Prairie 2 writes, Americans all know that depressions start when the stock market collapses, and that a bit of popular wisdom to the long list of failures of our education system. Add that bit of popular wisdom to the long list of failures of our education system. Depressions used to be called bank panics because they're caused by banks, and nowadays by bank-like institutions. The current depression started in 2008, and nothing has been done so far to stop it. The ongoing policy of the Federal Reserve is to pump trillions and trillions into the system to stay ahead of the grim reaper of deflation. Lately, they've been trying to jumpstart the economy by pumping still more money into the financial system in order to actually create inflation. In an economy based entirely on monetary policy, the only way to stimulate big business is to try to force them to think about doing something productive to make money by causing their existing money to go away through inflation. This appears to have been a dismal failure. Corporations have taken advantage of all this loose money and extremely low interest, not to do anything productive, but to amass huge war chests. The $2 trillion in cash they have on hand that they haven't been spending is really money they had borrowed from issuing corporate bonds. They aren't really in very good shape. The amount of money in these junk bonds continues to skyrocket as institutional investors load up on these so-called investments instead of going into the stock market. Bonds seem safer than the potential of a Black Monday flash crash of the Dow. The interest on these bonds pay, the interest these bonds pay is incredibly low, from tenths of a percent for so-called investment-grade bonds up to 2 or 3% for outright junk bonds. At some point, the secondary market is going to have to deal with trillions of dollars in bonds that they don't pay enough to cover normal inflation. Institutional traders find themselves trapped. A popular phrase is, you have to keep dancing while the music keeps playing. Fund managers need to show a competitive return, and this means buying junk bonds and holding their breath while dancing and smiling for the investors. At some point, this pile of paper in the middle of the dance floor will start to smoke. There will be a rush for the door, and not everybody will be able to get out. This wouldn't be such a big deal except for the sheer size of the conflagration. It will spread to the adjoining dance halls as the losses build and the panic will spread. Credit will freeze up. Businesses will start cutting losses, then cutting staff, dumping inventory. Prices begin to fall, and it all reinforces itself, spreading out of control. Remember, nothing has been done to fix the fire code violations of 2008. In fact, everything is worse than it was then. Those too big to fail banks, they're even bigger now and less stable. Is this an absolute prediction how things will play out? No. There are other dance halls with the exits blocked just waiting to ignite first, all up and down that sleazy part of town known as Wall Street. The rumor was that Obama would do a recess appointment of Elizabeth Warren to head the new agency to crack down on the companies that own these financial fire traps. The Republican response was to keep Congress technically in session over the holiday to make sure this didn't happen. The Republicans get a big cut off the operation of these fire traps, and they aren't the ones who will get burned. PrayerNumeral2.com is his website. Yeah, I've wondered that a lot. When the hell is somebody going to do something? I am vaguely aware. If it weren't for Bruce Enberg's missives here, I probably wouldn't know any of this stuff. But I'm vaguely aware that trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars have been pumped into the economy. Where in the hell is it? Home prices continue to fall. Atlanta, the metro area, is just getting its ass kicked up around its shoulders on real estate. I mean, real estate is just plunging. Still. Where's all the money going? Well, like Prairie 2 says, it's being held amassed into a gigantic war chest. So when things start to creak back alive, if they do, there are a handful of companies, institutional or investment companies, that will start buying up everything. If you ain't got the door, right, me. Maybe you want a house or a farm, not do nobody no harm, just take your vacations by the mountains or the sea. Don't sell that old cow for a car, you might want to stay right where you are, take a little advice from me. Cause I read the want ads every day, the voices in the paper always say, if you ain't got the dough, right me. Boy, if you ain't got the dough, right me. You better go back to your beautiful. Before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Maria Battaglia. Her message, hello to Mike and Kathy from independent television producer Maria Battaglia. Let's all try to stop echoing what Republicans do and say. Instead of presenting problems, let's hear more about solutions. P.S. Don't blame God for mankind's evil. from Roy in Fort Pierce. He writes, Mike, just heard your story about FEMA trailers. There was a couple of shady outfits here in Fort Pierce selling thousands of, quote, used FEMA trailers, end quote. At the time, we were looking for a travel trailer, so we went to check them out. My wife has a nose like a bloodhound, almost got an instant migraine as soon as she set foot in them. I asked the guy where they were from, and he was pretty cagey and finally admitted they had bought them cheap from Louisiana. And as I am a contractor, I asked what they'd painted the interiors with. You got mold inhibitor paint? There were a couple of Hispanic guys working on the other side of a lot painting. I went over to see the interiors, and they were riddled with mold. The guys had no masks or breathing apparatus, and I explained the health risks. They said, hey, man, it's a job. Got to feed my family. These thieving, despicable capitalist pigs not only spread death, they inflicted on their employees. I called the health and safety department at the county, and they came out and shut them down. No doubt they moved to a more business-friendly Florida county. Roy, Fort Pierce. Yeah, I spent too much time living in Florida. First time for about 8 months and the second time for about a year, or no, 2 years. And it's horrible. There are people down there who run shade tree car lots or little car repair shops or home repair shops or used trailer sales lots or whatever, who will just slice open your throat and giggle and hoot and slap their knees while you bleed to death. Awful, awful, the kind of people that are attracted to Florida to live there. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. If you live in Florida, you know what I'm talking about. Oh, my God. What else? Oh, yeah, from the India Times, here, or India Today. There's a new study that is reporting the presence of BT toxin. That is Bacillus thuringiensis, BT toxin. It's showing up in genetically modified crops in India. Those crops include genes extracted from bacteria to make them resistant to pest attacks. You know what GM crops are. Frankenfood. Well, as warned by organizations that said you cannot do this and expect to have no effects, negative effects, you can't do it. The BT toxin is turning up in human blood for the first time. Now, the genes, this BT gene, makes crops toxic to pests and are claimed to pose no danger to the environment or human health. No problem. Don't worry about it. Till now, according to the India Today article, scientists and multinational corporations promoting this garbage have maintained that BT toxin poses no danger to human health because the protein breaks down in the human gut. But now the presence of this toxin in human blood, it shows that the breaks down in the gut is a lie. Here goes capitalism once again, huh? Scientists from the University of Sherbrooke in Canada have detected the insecticidal protein CRY1AB circulating in the blood of pregnant as well as non-pregnant women. They have also detected the toxin in fetal blood, implying it could pass on to the next generation. The research paper has been peer-reviewed and accepted for publication in the journal Reproductive Toxicology. The study covered 30 pregnant women and 39 women who had come for tubectomy at the Center Hospitalier Université in Sherbrooke in Quebec, Canada. None of these women had worked or lived with a spouse working in contact with these pesticides. They were all, however, eating typical Canadian diet that includes genetically modified foods such as soybeans, corn, and potatoes. So here you go. The article is about Canadian women who were tested. The article appears in India Today. Maybe it's been the Canadian press. This CRY1AB toxin was detected in 93% and 80% of maternal and fetal blood samples, respectively. Given the potential toxicity of these environmental pollutants and the fragility of the fetus, more studies are needed, particularly those using the placental transfer approach, blah, 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 blah. Indian regulators should be immediately called for detailed toxicological studies to know the extent of contamination of the human blood with BT toxins coming from cottonseed oil and also ascertain its long-term health impacts. According to the one of the scientists in India who is in the government agency that tries to keep track of this stuff. But for anybody who had any doubts as to whether or not genetically modified food was going to be, hey, no problem. It's the wonders of capitalism. Monsanto and, you know, the rest of these monster food companies that have nothing to do with food and everything to do with profit. Now, let me ask you. Let me see a show of hands. Who out there thinks that these companies that produce genetically modified so-called food, let me see a show of hands. How many of you think that those are corporations, capitalists, who are interested in feeding the nation or the globe's hungry, A, or answer B, simply interested in the profit potential of dumping this garbage into the global food market and then controlling the seeds necessary, the sale of seeds necessary to continue to do it. Can I see some hands? Ah, I don't see any hands where people think that these capitalist monoliths are in business to make sure that hungry people eat. Why, you bunch of cynics. That's what they tell us. Go to their websites. Go to Archer Daniels Midland. Go to Monsanto. Go to some of these companies' websites. I mean, my God. Oh, striving to feed the billions already here and those on the way. Do you really think that that's what they're about? So there you have it. In fetal blood. Now, I would expect that all the people who claim to be the males, the white males, and their white female toys, the Christian fundamentalists who claim to be all about the protection of the fetus. I would expect that over the next few days, now this report is getting out there, if you read the Indian Times or if you are interested in experiments being done concerning Canadian women, I would imagine all the Christian fundamentalists who are just so, so devoted to the protection of the fetus will show up. What is this, Monday night? Oh, it's a holiday. Okay, at least by Wednesday or Thursday at the front gates of these chemical companies, these poisonous bastards who are taking food and turning it into a toxic environment for unborn children. Right? I can hear it now. The thunder of all the feet of people who are running towards the front gates of these companies to let them know that they are not going to stand by while fetal blood is contaminated with the result of genetic material injected into food by the chemical companies. I can hear them. Listen, quiet. Do you hear them? The thunder of feet from the Christian fundamentalists who are so devoted to the fetus. I think I hear it anyway. Do I hear it? Maybe it's just the thunder.
Yet tonight, how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Maria Battaglia and her message. Hello, Mike and Kathy. From independent television producer Maria Battaglia, let's all try to stop echoing what Republicans do and say. Instead of presenting problems, let's hear more about solutions. P.S. Don't blame God for mankind's evil. Follow-up to the never-ending bloodshed and troubles in the Middle East. Egypt has opened its border with Gaza now that Mubarak is gone, and there is no longer a peace agreement between Israel and Egypt that can be addressed by talking to the president of Egypt, since there is no president of Egypt. The Egyptian authorities have opened the border with Gaza, letting Palestinians leave that blockaded territory. It's always astonishing to me that the Egyptians were willing to do that. The Egyptian government, not the people, but the government, were willing to participate in the kind of apartheid that is being forced on the people of Gaza, the Palestinians. It's amazing what a couple $3 billion a year will do, right? That's what we were giving Egypt. Hundreds of people with luggage gathered at the Rafah crossing in the south of Gaza before the border opened at 9 a.m. Hundreds are expected to leave Gaza by the end of the day. Women, children, and men over the age of 40 will be permitted free travel from Gaza to Egypt. Men under 40 will be required to apply for and be granted a visa. Of course, a huge proportion of Gaza's 1.5 million population is between 18 and 40. Crossing will be open 8 hours a day, 6 days a week. In the 4 years since Hamas took control of Gaza, 18 months after winning elections, and Israel imposed a stringent blockade, the Rafah border has opened intermittently, and only students, businessmen, and people needing medical treatment have been allowed through. Israel's government is expressing concern about the reopening of the border, saying it will lead to the shipment of weapons and militants into Gaza. And it's also alarmed, the Israeli government, that would be the Likudniks, the Benjamin Netanyahu, also alarmed at the prospect of closer ties between the new Egyptian government and Gaza. A local journalist, I guess a local journalist in Gaza said, quote, people are happy. Rafah is open. They say it's the first step toward breaking the siege of Gaza. They see it as a result of the Egyptian revolution and reconciliation. The numbers wanting to cross the border is expected to rise when the school year ends in around 2 weeks. It's got to be a development that is very much of a concern to the Israeli government. Arthur Goldreich died in Tel Aviv a few days ago. Was it today? He was 82. He was a South African Jew in very much opposition to the apartheid government there. He worked with Nelson Mandela, very closely with Nelson Mandela. He was willing to take up arms in support of the ANC, in support of an end to the white-controlled apartheid government. He was arrested, along with 16 others, including top ANC leaders, in 1963. Most of those arrested were tried in 64, along with Mandela, who had been arrested in 62. Mandela testified that the ANC had been driven to violence by the police shooting of 69 demonstrators in 1960. That was what became known as the Sharpsville, or the Sharpeville Massacre. Goldreich avoided prison when he and another man, a lawyer and ANC leader, bribed a guard in an escape from the jail where they were all being held before the trial. They disguised themselves as priests and they fled to what is now Tanzania. Goldreich is interesting to me, a very interesting historical character. He was born in 1929 in a South African town then known as Pietersburg. Goldreich moved to Israel after World War II and fought with an organization called the Palmach, an elite fighting force in Israel's war for independence. In 1954, he returned to South Africa to join the struggle against apartheid. You know where I'm going with this, don't you? He eventually came to realize that what the Israelis were practicing against the Palestinians was apartheid. He became a critic of Israel's belligerent policies toward the Palestinians, and he compared what the Israelis are doing to South African apartheid. He was 82. The Nelson Mandela Foundation announced his death. He died in Tel Aviv. It's amazing what you can find in the obituary pages. We'll be back after the break. Thanks to Maria Battaglia for the sponsorship this past hour. Third hour coming up. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. Malloy program. This hour is sponsored by Diana Mathiason. Diana Mathiason. Yeah, Mathiason. Her message: we could solve our fiscal problems with Social Security and Medicare by removing the cap on FICA. The Republicans have always said they wanted a flat tax, so let's give them one. Thank you, Diana. No, they wouldn't go for that. No. But you're right. You're absolutely right. Regarding the genetically modified poison that is being sold as food by companies like Monsanto, Archer Daniel Midland, other companies like that. We were talking last hour about a new study reporting the presence of BT toxin in human blood. And BT toxin is something that they include, or they are these genes extracted from bacteria to make them resistant to pest attacks. Now, I'm waiting for somebody to write me and tell me, well, this stuff is harmless, Mike, so don't worry about it. Okay. If finding this stuff in fetal blood, whereas before it wasn't there, if that's harmless and okay, well, The claim is that the BT toxin poses no threat to the environment or human health. It's the genetically modified garbage is a toxin derived from a soil bacterium called Bacillus thuringiensis. I don't know, something like that. It's called BT. Now it's showing up in a Canadian study. 93% of maternal blood samples taken and 80% of fetal blood samples taken and 69% of non-pregnant women all had trace amounts of this stuff. What kind of a chemical or toxin load can the human body handle before it just stops? How much can vital organs and blood and capillaries and arteries, how much? You know, is there a point at which capitalism will have to stop because everybody dies? Is that what we're looking at here? Anyway, Cat Mary in Memphis, for whom this is a serious issue, writes, tens of thousands of farmers in India have committed bankruptcy-related suicide directly due to Monsanto's lies about BT cotton. Most of India's crops are rain-fed. Monsanto lied about the need to irrigate BT cotton, and irrigation is expensive. Indian livestock used to graze on normal cotton plants after the cotton had been harvested, and they had no ill effects. When they grazed on what was left over of Monsanto's BT cotton, they got sick and they died. The cows did. This took away another source of money and food from the farmers. Also, workers harvesting the BT cotton developed rashes and respiratory diseases, kind of like living in FEMA trailers, right? Monsanto also lied about yield. BT cotton is low yield, like most genetically modified crops. Moreover, Monsanto made Indian farmers contract to buy only Monsanto suicide seeds, so-called. Crops grown from them don't naturally reproduce the next year, so farmers have to buy more seeds. The price of seeds went, oh, here's a surprise, up drastically. Monsanto also lied about herbicides and pesticides and made Indian farmers contract to buy only Monsanto's toxic Roundup. The BT cotton required much more Roundup than the farmers had been told, and the cost of the Roundup also, here's the surprise, increased. Roundup use also creates so-called super weeds that become resistant to this garbage that can even damage harvesting machinery and so forth. It was like a company store, Monsanto. So farmers committed suicide. And the bastards at Monsanto bought their land. Dirt cheap. Hugh Grant, not the movie star, the CEO of Monsanto, needs to be prosecuted for terrorism. Cat Mary in Memphis. Well, Cat Mary, with all due respect, a lot of people need to be prosecuted for terrorism. So is George W. Bush. But, honey, don't hold your breath. Unbelievable. So, I do wonder. I just have this question. And I'm not well-versed on... as well versus I should be on genetically modified food. I just know that I don't want it. I also know I am eating it. I don't know how to avoid it. We try. We try to buy from local growers who, now this time of year, local growers are in abundance. But in the winter, spring, it's hard to find locally produced produce that is affordable. And we're willing to pay, because we don't have a big-ass lifestyle, we're willing to pay extra for food that is really food. When I say extra, I'm referring to grocery store food. And the only reason grocery store food is as cheap as it is because the price is artificially depressed because of stuff like this. But it's just a monster. It's just a monster, this. And when you go to the store, you ever notice when you walk? Well, of course you do, but I'm just saying, you walk into your friendly food supermarket, right? And go to the produce section. Son of a bitch, every single tomato is exactly the same size, exactly the same color, not a flaw on it. Now, why do you think that is? Every ear of corn, go ahead. Peel back the husk just a little bit. Take a look. White corn, yellow corn, take a look. Jesus, jumping. God, it doesn't look like the corn my grandma used to grow in her big-ass old garden. I mean, that stuff was didn't look like this stuff. But, you know, when you see that, what do you do? I look at that squash, crookneck squash, yellow squash. Take a look at yellow squash. It's just like, it looks like something out of Brave New World. Just bideep, 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 little carbon copies of squashes. They're all the same. And then in the bin next to it, they have the bigger ones. Bidoop, 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 bidoop. And over here, they have the big ones. Bidoop, 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 bidoop. That's scary. Used to be you'd go in to buy tomatoes, used to be. Christ, what am I talking about? 10 years ago? A long time ago there, Malloy! You go in to buy tomatoes, and some of them you look at and go, oh, Lord, those are ugly tomatoes. And now people will crawl all over each other to get the ugly tomatoes, right? We'll be right back.
Understand my endurance.
listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Welcome back. 21 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Diana Mathiasen. Her message, we could solve our fiscal problems with Social Security and Medicare by removing the cap on FICA. The Republicans have always said they want a flat tax. Let's give them one. Yeah. Okay. one more thing about the wonders of American capitalism, or global capitalism for that matter. But have you been seeing these commercials on television for this product? What's it called? Niaspan. Have you seen those? Niaspan? They are staged. The actors are pretending like they're having an intervention. You know, this one guy sits there and he says, he taps on the TV screen and he's talking to his older brother. You know, something about, oh, I see you back on the cheeseburgers. At least you haven't stopped using your stationary bike for a coat rack, but it's time we had a chat. And this is for a cholesterol drug, Niaspan. It's supposed to lower the bad cholesterol and reduce heart attacks and yada, yada, yada. And raise the good cholesterol. So there's a big study, and it was announced last Thursday that says this hope might be misplaced. The study could change the way doctors treat millions of patients with heart disease. Now, you know, this is in the Times. Common wisdom has been that such patients should take a statin drug like Lipitor or Zocor to lower bad cholesterol. And in many cases, the vitamin niacin to raise their good cholesterol. But in the trial, niacin proved zero benefit when taken with a statin. The result are a series of studies that suggest that what doctors thought they knew about cholesterol may be wrong. About, you know, balancing the good, the bad, and the ugly. Everybody knows that, the common wisdom is that too much cholesterol in your system is going to clog up your arteries. And I know there are people who say, well, that's not true. That heart attacks are not caused by clogged arteries from cholesterol. Heart attacks are caused by scarring inside the arteries, which leads to the heart attacks. Anyway, in 2006, the drug company Pfizer halted development of a drug that raised good cholesterol levels after studies showed that the medicine increased the risks of death. And on Thursday, government scientists announced that Niaspan, an extended-release form of niacin, not only did not provide any protection against heart attacks when taken with Zocor in patients with heart disease, but also slightly increased the risk of stroke. A professor of medicine and preventive medicine at the University of Buffalo, who was a trial investigator, said, quote, "We were stunned, to say the least." In a statement, Dr. Eugene Sun, a vice president for Abbott Laboratories, the maker of Niaspan, said, quote, "Based on this long history of clinical evidence, Niaspan remains an important agent for patients with blood lipid problems," end quote. But wait, guys. I mean, massive study indicates that that's not the case at all. As a matter of fact, massive study indicates that your product may cause people to have a higher incidence of stroke. Oh, but never mind. No. What are you going to believe? Your lying eyes or what we tell you? What are you going to believe? I hate things like this. Here it is, Niaspan. With all these phony-ass commercials. I mean, you know, the ones that get real personal where they, you know, they hire actors to sit there and go, hey, listen, I've got to tell you something here. you know, I just want to reach through the television and break stuff. Throttle people. But when the chief medical officer and vice president at Abbott Laboratories, that the company that produces Niaspan, even with the scientific proof right there, massive studies, don't take this. Don't. At the very least, it does nothing. At the worst, it increases your chance of a stroke. Now, last year, Abbott Laboratories sold $927 million worth of Niaspan. That's almost a billion, right, boss? So what do you think? Do you think Abbott Laboratories is going to halt the sale of a drug that does nothing in the best of scenarios and may increase strokes in the worst, according to this study? What do you think? Can I see a show of hands again? How many over here think they'll stop selling it? How many over here think they'll continue to... Well, never mind.
Because he left, I never put it like a rattlesnake shed in his skin. Well, they search the rooms, they check out the groups, and then they photograph the scene. I mean, individuals stranded in a limousine. Everybody.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So anyway, this drug, Niaspan, or whatever the hell it is, niacin is just a B vitamin, isn't it? But it does nothing in combination with the statin drug to have any effect on cholesterol at all. Heart disease, stroke, yada, yada. As a matter of fact, according to the study, it may raise your risk of stroke. And in a statement, Dr. Eugene Sun, vice president of Abbott Laboratories that produces Niaspan, said, quote, based on its long history of clinical evidence, Niaspan remains an important agent for patients with blood lipid problems. Well, the study... according to chairman of cardiovascular medicine at the Cleveland Clinic. Okay, is that credentialed enough for you? Dr. Steven Nissen, chairman of cardiovascular medicine at Cleveland Clinic, said, quote, this study shows that approving drugs and allowing them to stay on the market on the basis of how they affect lipids and other biomarkers is not good policy. It's time to have a new regulatory approach. Well, yeah, I would think so. Now, in the trial, 3,414 participants with heart and vascular disease were given either Zocor and a placebo or Zocor and Niaspan and followed for almost 3 years. The trial ended 18 months early because it was found that there was almost no chance that taking Niaspan would prove beneficial. Almost no chance. Zocor and the other medications, the statins, did a good job of keeping patients' bad cholesterol levels relatively low. Researchers said patients should not stop taking Niaspan without talking to their doctors first. But this kind of stuff never stops. It just never stops. Remember, what was the drug Avandia that was killing people left and right? Was that the diabetes drug? I forget. There was some... NSAID that was killing people left and right for rheumatoid arthritis. But the commercials, now I did not look at a television over the weekend, just didn't see one, had other things to do. I don't know if these Niaspan commercials are still running, but I'll bet they are. This hour, by the way, is sponsored by Diana Mathiasen, who writes, we could solve our fiscal problems with Social Security and Medicare by removing the cap on FICA. The Republicans have always said they want a flat tax. Let's give them one. That is so sensible. I mean, it makes such sense. What is the cap now? It stops at 100, 102 or 103, 106,000 or something. If you earn beyond that, you don't pay any more FICA tax, the Social Security tax. And that never made any sense to me. Well, I mean, it's something that it's not means tested. So that means everybody gets to have it. Even somebody who makes $150 billion a year would still be eligible for Social Security. So why not tax everybody? Why just people below the 100-something thousand income level? I mean, I don't quite understand that. Any more than I understand why Niaspan or BT infected foods just continue to be sold and everybody just says, hey, has to do with capitalism, doesn't it, huh? Those at the top 0.1% say to the 99.9% on the bottom, so to speak, go to hell. Just on your way there, let me make money by feeding you, prescribing for you, directing you towards stuff that will kill you. But I want the money. And I will get the money because I am a capitalist, and capitalism in America is part of the Christian religion. And even if it isn't, it still is. You badmouth capitalism, you're badmouthing Jesus. And if you badmouth Jesus, well, it just proves that you are a filthy, rotten, atheistic liberal and probably vote Democratic. Paul writes, Mike, I have a family that lives in the northern panhandle of Texas, most of which has been wheat farmers all their lives. I'm starting to hear stories that weeds and other plants are starting to become resistant to Roundup. Yeah, it has to happen. I mean, weeds are not, you know, really stupid creatures. I mean, they have the same prime directive as human beings. Exactly the same prime directive. Get your genes into the next generation. Everything else is incidental to that. So the weeds, you know, they are exposed to Roundup. And whatever process a weed uses, I don't think weeds have meetings and they get together at midnight and say, God damn, what about this Roundup stuff, man? Damn, what are we going to do?
Well, let's just genetically modify ourselves. And,
you know, I'm sure weeds don't do that, but probably in the weed world, something very close to that. Damn, they're trying to kill us. Yeah, well, you know, this Roundup stuff. Well, what are we going to do? Well, very easy. We just get stronger. Somebody wrote to me and said, Roundup is not really all that toxic. That's nothing more than, what was it, Kathy? What did I say that night? It was bleach? No, salt water. Salt water? Some kind of a salt. I don't think salt water in the sense that you're, it's not sodium chloride, it's some other chloride. Yeah, well. Well, I just wonder about these things late at night. I really do. I just wonder. Why it just continues to go on. And of course, my answer is very simple. Capitalism is a poisonous, destructive, anti-life, anti-family, anti-child, anti-woman, anti-man system. That's why the right-wingers embrace it so much. And none of this stuff can be changed. I mean, who would have thought that we would develop an industry in this country? And I don't know that a genetically modified food was developed strictly here, but I'm talking about our industry. We would develop an industry that would figure out a way to take over the food supply, then jerk the price around, and then provide weed killers that would only work on particular weeds because the plants were half hog and half fish and maybe a little bit of corn thrown in. And then over here you have strawberries that, if you're not careful because of the genetic input they've had, they might get up at midnight and start walking across a goddamn field. Strawberries. Or ducks that can turn themselves into asparagus. I mean, who would have thought that this is what would be one of the byproducts of predatory capitalism? They don't give a goddamn. They don't couldn't care less. Couldn't care less. Hey, listen, you know, we're going to develop this stuff and, oh, it'll kill you. But we can make a lot of money before anyone figures out that it will kill you. And it will only kill you if you, if you take too much of it. That's not right. It'll only kill you if you eat it. Yeah, but it's in food. Yeah, but, well, you don't really eat BT. Don't. You're making my head hurt. I'm just here to make money. Oh, God. It just never stops, does it? It just never stops. Of course, I guess I should not be so damn negative all the time. I'm not trying to be negative. Sarah Palin has a movie coming out? From Here to Inanity, no? Citizen Vane? The Scum Also Rises? Brain Spotting? Chariots of Liar. What's it going to be called, this movie? Moosferatu. Dopey's Choice. Oh, here's a good one. The Lion, L-Y-I-N, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Driving Miss Crazy. That happens to be my favorite one. Who sent this? John Cole sent this. At Balloon Juice? Chariots of Bile. Brain Simple. True Grift. They call me Sister Fibs. The Incredible Sulk. Something Wicked This Way Comes. We'll be right back. Still. This hour has been sponsored by Diana Mathiasen. Her message, we could solve our fiscal problems with Social Security and Medicare by removing the cap on FICA. Republicans always said they want a flat tax. Let's give them one. Sure. They're not serious, though, Diana. That's just rhetoric. But you know that. And keep going back to the election in New York's 26th congressional district of Kathy Hochul, Democrat. Her campaign was focused squarely on Paul Ryan's plan to dismantle Medicare and replace it with a voucher system. Oh, by the way, it's a, you know, Republican district, so much so that last year the Republican candidate took 76% of the vote. And this time Kathy Hochul got, I think, 48%. And her Republican, her two Republican opponents split the remainder. And reading that bio piece, it was in New York Times today in the New York section, about her family, about this candidate, now representative's family, and what they did growing up, how their attitude was to do good. You know, get in the world and do well, but while you're doing that, if you can do that, do good. Take care of people. Take care of your brother, your sister. Not your blood brother, your blood sister, just your fellow human being. And then I think about, I went to her opponent's website, the Republican, what was her name? Hell, I don't even remember, and it really doesn't matter. But if you went to her opponent's website, the Republican's website, or now that it's been scrubbed, if you just go to Wikipedia and take a look at what the Republican was involved in, I don't see anything on her bio that says anything about, oh, she was on the woman's commission, the woman's committee at her country club. Which I guess is the committee that plans all the soirees and get-togethers. And the Republican, of course, as you know, the Republican's plan was to follow the Paul Ryan dictate, and that is to dismantle Social Security, Medicare, replace it with a voucher system for older folks to try to deal with while they're trying to figure out what kind of cancer treatment they really want. And take Social Security and turn it over to the private investment firms who would then milk it for all it's worth. In other words, to destroy the country. These vermin are trying to destroy the country. I'm not saying that Democrats are, Democratic candidates are these paragons of leadership. Most Democrat members of the Democratic Party who are, you know, House members or Senate members or whatever, are just scared of their own shadows. They're afraid to walk up to the nearest Republican and, figuratively speaking, smash him right in the mouth. You know, and the way you do that is you don't smash him in the mouth, although that would probably feel very rewarding to a Democrat who is in the House or the Senate. But what you do is just don't back down. you just and when they produce war criminals to run the country, you indict them. Yeah. Or you at the very least impeach them. I guess you can't indict a sitting president, but you can impeach him and a sitting vice president. You just do that. And if you become the new president of the United States, and during your campaign you talk about some weird thing called a public option for reforming health insurance, when the nation wants single payer, but because you're the Democratic president now, you're terrified of following up on your campaign promises, so you even drop public option. Oh no, just kidding. So Democratic leadership sucks too, big time, because they are such cowards. But Republicans? Republican programs, Republican policies on a national level, on a state level, are designed, they're designed to kill you, to end your life. They are designed to kill you. Their environmental policies designed to kill you. Their policies on health insurance reform designed to kill you. And yet, these filthy cockroaches came up with the term death panels and said that the Democratic Party's health care plan had death panels. And I don't get that. I would think, you know, the Republicans, the Christian Republicans, which is damn near all of them, they have their own death panels. It's their churches. you know, decisions are made in the churches about the, who's going to die and go to hell and who's going to live and have eternal life with Jesus. They have the death panels. I mean, it's so simple. But I digress. I wanted to get to Sarah Palin's road trip. I'll probably do that tomorrow night since we're flat out of time. But she's saddling up and heading out and going to travel around with her Freedom Express or whatever the hell you call it. Got a great send-off from all those great big old fat boys on those great big old fat Harleys. You know, the Rolling Thunder review. No, that's music. The Rolling Thunder tour, whatever it is. Great big old fat men on them great big old motorcycles. Now, don't write to me and tell me that you're a Rolling Thunderer and you're not fat. And, in fact, you'd come over here and whip my ass if you wanted to. Save it, Sparky. You take a look at most bike riders, and they are lard asses. I don't know why that is, but it is. All right, I'm out of here. I'll see you tomorrow night. All right, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.